Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to another episode of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I am your host, Andy Wales, here to guide you through the wonderful world of pro wrestling. Although not by myself, of course, I do require the services of my audio tag team partner, Mr. Mo Chatra. And Mo, good evening. We've not got just the one pay-per-view. We've actually got two pay-per-views to talk about this week.
Absolutely. Good evening, Andy. And that's quite right. Two for the price of one this month. And WWE spoiling us with not only a WWE main card pay-per-view in Backlash, but an NXT TakeOver event to boot with NXT TakeOver Chicago. So a weekend of action kicking off with a bonus show. Three for the price of one, in fact. A WWE UK special two, which airs Friday night as we record this. So, yes, plenty to talk about.
Yeah, just briefly on that UK show, I mean, we do know that it's going to be voiced by JR, Jim Ross, and Nigel McGuinness. So it's certainly going to be interesting. The first time those two have broadcast together, so that'll be an interesting dynamic. I'm quite looking forward to just how the matches are called as much as anything. Any words on who's taking part, what matches we can look forward to? Because, I mean, we know it's going to take place in Norwich.
That's right. So, as we talked about last week, the show is taped in Paige's hometown in the venue that's run by her family for their big shows, for their promotions big shows. And bit of a knock on Paige and her family there. But nonetheless, the two big matches to air on that show are WWE UK Championship title defense by the champion Tyler Bate against the fantastic Mark Andrews, former TNA or Impact Wrestling star. And on top of that, we've got a number one contenders match, which is Pete Dunne, who fought Tyler Bate in the finals of the UK Championship tournament back in January from Blackpool, taking on a very good friend and one half of Mustache Mountain alongside Tyler Bate, the one and only Trent Seven. So Pete Dunne against Trent Seven in the number one contenders match for the UK Championships. The winner of that faces the winner of the match between Tyler Bate and Mark Andrews. So that is airing Friday evening UK time. I think it's 9 o'clock UK time. So it might be just before this pod does get released. But the word is that this show, which has been taped, it's not a live show. Both of those matches were reportedly excellent. And we're going to give spoilers away as we come on to previewing TakeOver, because the winners of both of those matches will be competing at the TakeOver show. But for those that are able to watch it, the word is that it's well worth the watch, especially for those two matches. Both matches said to be excellent, so do check it out if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's it is a little bit of a spoiler. It doesn't take much for it to be a spoiler, because it's, you know, we know that Tyler Bate is defending the UK Championship against Pete Dunne at the NXT event, you know, because this has been advertised, this has been pushed. So slightly strange booking from WWE, and certainly with the timing of it, unless perhaps more, I don't know whether you know any more of this, but perhaps the originally they were going to be broadcasting this, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago or something like that. Is would that explain why the timing and the booking sort of clash in the way that they do? They're giving away the results in the matter of fact, aren't they?
They are, that's right. But as far as I'm aware, the shows from Norwich were never meant to be live broadcasts. So they were always meant to be taped, and then they were to air on the network afterwards. I think what changed, though, is that they decided after arranging the tapings in Norwich to have UK Championship match on the takeover card. So that was a decision that was made after they put all the plans in place for the Norwich TV tapings. So that would explain why it's a bit of an odd one, in that they're almost giving away the outcome of both of these key matches from the show that's yet to air on the network. And it's, you know, widely reported that it will be Pete Dunne against Tyler Bate at TakeOver. So, you know, that match will be, if it's, you know, close to as good as the match that they had in January in Blackpool, then we're really in for a treat. But before we even get there, both of those guys are involved in separate matches, as I say, Friday evening on the WWE Network. So, you know, plenty of great action from some of the cream of the British wrestling scene to look forward to.
Absolutely so, absolutely so. I mean, switching back over to that NXT event, we did touch on it briefly last week, but, you know, added to the card since has been Roderick Strong versus Eric Young, who's going to have Alexander Wolf and Killian Dim at ringside with him. Not exactly great sort of build towards this. It's kind of just sort of plopped up and happened. I don't know quite what to think, in a way, with some of the characters on NXT, because we've had a good build here with Roderick Strong. I mean, a good build, doesn't it? They've put a good couple of weeks of VT packages together. Nice sort of, you know, look behind of the character. So you would imagine that this is an opportunity for Roderick Strong to go over and perhaps go over Strong and then look to continue to build him if that's what they're intending to do.
Well, that's right. I mean, it has been very well put together packages with, you know, showing kind of backstory to Roderick Strong. I mean, I've been following Roderick Strong's career for about 15 years now. So for nearly his entire career that he's been around in the wrestling business, I've followed him. And one of the things about Roddy is that you know, he's a very, very good wrestler, very good in the ring, bell to bell. He isn't half a bland character. I mean, he's really quite boring, in fact. So they needed something like this to just create a bit of interest in him, because, you know, when he comes out there, he's not the most extravagant. He doesn't come across as larger than life or an extrovert by any stretch of the imagination. You know, certainly kind of given his very unique backstory about, you know, his upbringing and issues between his mum and dad, and then the fact that obviously much more recently he's married to one of the four horsewomen, and that's the MMA four horsewomen, Marina Shafir, and obviously recently had a baby with her as well. You know, all very, very interesting stuff. And, you know, so that kind of stuff is good, because, as I say, quite a bland character in the ring, but certainly not bland away from it. And you know, I think his match against Eric Young, you're right, you know, will be a good vehicle to try and get him over and create interest in him. And I'm sure they can, between them, have a pretty good match too. So it is one that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar kind of thing, I suppose, for Ruby Riott, who's just come in. She's part of this triple threat match for the women's championship, her and Nikki Cross going up against Asuka. I don't know about yourself, Mo. I'm expecting Asuka to successfully defend here, but perhaps another opportunity as well for Asuka to further develop this, you know, this kind of arrogant heel turn that she's been going through, with, I suppose, the end game being Ember Moon, once she's fit again, somewhere down the line, being the woman that actually manages to finally defeat Asuka.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, just this past week, in fact, I was reading stuff about how Asuka's undefeated streak in NXT has now actually exceeded the winning streak, which was in the end a fake winning streak for Goldberg of 174-0. So apparently that's how many consecutive wins she's had on the NXT brand. So, you know, it just demonstrates just how dominant she's been for quite a while now. You know, she is somebody who I think could be holding on to the title till at least the takeover to take place on the SummerSlam weekend. And I think you're right. I mean, Ember Moon is somebody who came close just prior to WrestleMania at the takeover event in Orlando. And, you know, it could be that she finally gets a chance at the event just before SummerSlam. But if that's not the case, NXT will soon be welcoming two other compatriots from Japan, two of the very, very best female wrestlers in the world from the Stardom promotion, Io Shirai and Kairi Hojo. And these two girls are every bit as good, if not better, than Asuka as workers. And you know, their arrival is very eagerly anticipated. They've only just signed their deals. There's been a lot of speculation that they would sign over the last several months. They finally signed in the last week, and their arrivals in NXT are imminent. And it might be that they decide that actually Io Shirai is the woman who eventually defeats Asuka. And if that's the case, then it might be that she's the one that faces Asuka at SummerSlam, at the takeover event before SummerSlam. So, you know, the female roster on NXT is one that, you know, we've been a bit down about over the last several months, but with some of the recent recruits and some of the other younger talents coming through and developing reasonably well, the female division on the NXT brand is certainly picking up a head of steam once again.
Yeah, I think it certainly has improved. And perversely, almost, is all the call-ups that have happened have almost forced them into a position where a lot of the younger and undeveloped talents, it's almost like there's an even playing field for them because they're all there together now rather than, you know, stronger ones versus weaker ones. So although Asuka is very, very dominant, it's almost like the rest, there's quite a level playing field, and it's given a lot of them more opportunity to shine. So, yeah, I think the NXT women's division is beginning to take shape again. So perhaps by the end of the year, the WWE will be looking at two or three more call-ups to enhance the two divisions that they've got on Raw and SmackDown. So encouraging signs ahead, hopefully. We spoke last week briefly that, you know, we expect Bobby Roode and Hideo Itami to have a good match, and certainly that crowd should be quite amped with it being in Chicago and Hideo Itami's finishing move being the GTS. That we expect it to be a good match. Expect to be quite an atmosphere in there as well. And the same for Authors of Pain and DIY having a rematch after the previous matches they've been involved in. So on the whole, you look at this card and I've got to say, I'm quite looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a good event with a really, really strong crowd, which again, we did mention last week. But, you know, as a package, I've got to say, NXT Chicago, you know, this is an NXT event that I'm looking forward to again, much like we were in the position of last year where, you know, every few months would come along and you'd really look forward to them because on paper, you knew you had a good card, and you knew that you would have a hot crowd.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, I think this one should blow away NXT TakeOver Orlando from early April. I really do think that. I think all of the matches on the card, we know about five of them thus far, have the potential to be great. All five. Roderick Strong and Eric Young. I mean, Strong on his day can be a fantastic worker. And if he's got his working boots on, you know, he could put together a really, really good match. I think that might be the opener, in fact. And I'm sure it will be really good. Water Pain and DIY. You know, we've seen some of the greatness that they can pull together. And, you know, DIY are just one of the best tag teams in the world. And they can carry anyone to a good match. Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, I'm expecting great things from them. The three-way for the Women's Championship, Asuka, Nikki Cross, Ruby Riott. Again, you know, three very talented women. And, you know, I'm expecting them to certainly have the best NXT women's match we've seen in, a good 6, maybe 9 months. And then obviously the main event. I mean, Bobby Roode and Itami, I mean, Itami was a guy who was maybe about 10, 12 years ago, one of the top 10 best workers in the world in Pro Wrestling Noah. Just a phenomenal worker. He's not as good a worker as he was. I mean, he's still only 36, but injuries have taken a toll. I mean, if you see him now, I mean, it doesn't look quite in the best of shape. Obviously, he's got that big scar on his shoulder. So he certainly suffered with injuries, but he's somebody who can still really deliver. He has been an elite level worker for a number of years. And, you know, I think, you know, if he's motivated and really wants to prove a point, especially in front of that live NXT crowd in Chicago, you know, there's no reason why Tommy and Rude can't have a great match. So, all things considered, it really, really should be one of the best WWE events of 2017.
I am looking forward to it. I've just got one final point on NXT. Now, Drew McIntyre, was also known as Drew Galloway, you know, has come back to WWE. He's coming in NXT, and he feels like a star. That he just kind of, I don't know, there's something, his aura about him. He looks more confident. You know, he comes out and you don't see the jobber that he was, the role that he was cast in before he was released and then went around the indies and, you know, really built himself up. The guy carries himself like a bit of a star, and I think that he feels that way. On the other hand, we've got Cassius Ohno, also known as Chris Hero. And I've got to say, Mo, I'm not quite sure what it is. I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know whether it's the promos. I don't know whether it's, you know, the ring attire, the way that he's dressed. I don't know whether it's a matches. I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but there's something about the package. It's just not, it just doesn't ring star to me. It doesn't shout out to me. And I don't know. I've got concerns that, you know, another 6 months down the line, we could well be seeing him being released again, you know, or him requesting for his lease release, because I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be working for me. Do you think there's something missing there, or does he need to do something differently?
I mean, I've just been on a catch-up of NXT today. I actually hadn't seen NXT since WrestleMania, so I've caught up on the shows today. And one of the things that, I mean, you're quite right, I did pick up, is that he certainly hasn't been one of the pushed and prominent talents on the NXT weekly show, which is a surprise, given that it was a big deal that they brought him back, and with a fair bit of fanfare too. I mean, this is a guy who I rated as the second best worker in all of professional wrestling in 2016. He just had so many great matches. It was just ridiculous. And that was the reason why they called him back. I mean, it's often the case that when WWE lets people go, they don't bring them back. But he was so strong, having so many great matches against a variety of different opponents. They just couldn't help but, you know, bring him back. They thought he was that good. So the fact that they've barely used him on TV, at least, since his return, is a bit strange and a bit bizarre. I think there's a bit of a longer term game with him, though. I think that they want to progress a couple of storylines and give him a bit of a slow build. I think that NXT TakeOver prior to SummerSlam is where he'll feature much more prominently and possibly even be the next opponent for Bobby Roode. I mean, they haven't exactly got a huge amount of established talents that can come across as viable opponents for Bobby Roode. That's something that they can certainly do. I mean, in terms of making that kind of impression on the audience, one of the things that Chris Hero obviously hasn't got going for him is his physique. He's got a pretty ordinary physique.
I think fans can accept that. You know, you look at, you go straight to the main roster, you know, there we are. You know, the new face of America, he's a star, isn't he? You know what I mean? You look at his physique, he's a star. It doesn't matter about his physique. I think if just the way he carries himself, the way he comes across, you know, and look, you know, Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno, he's not the size of Kevin Owens. He's not, you know, there's not that physique. He's better than that. And it's like, but I just don't understand why you hide it in poor attire. I don't know. Was he wearing that kind of attire when he was Chris Hero, or was he just working in normal wrestling tights?
No, I mean, he wore normal wrestling tights, usually didn't wear a top either. You know, he just wrestled like a normal pro wrestler. Well, he just dressed like a normal pro wrestler. Obviously, the kind of gear he's had in NXT, they're actually putting it on him to try and hide his physique. But if anything, it just makes him look worse. And I think you make quite a valid point there. You know, they need to let Chris Hero be Chris Hero. And when Chris Hero is allowed to be Chris Hero, he's just such a great talent and such an absorbing character and somebody who can get over well, in much the same way that Kevin Owens was allowed to. I mean, they let him be Kevin Owens. He was the same guy that we saw in the Indies as Kevin Steen. And they didn't really try to do anything much different. And, you know, they need to put the same kind of faith and trust in Cassius Ohno, because if they do, you know, they've got another very, very valuable asset. And they've got to also remember one other thing as well. They've brought in a lot of talent from the indie scene over the last 2 or 3 years. And a lot of these guys are in their mid to late 30s, even coming into their 40s. You know, your Austin Aries, your Bobby Roode, your Eric Youngs, Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno, Shinsuke Nakamura. I could go on and on. And, you know, time is ticking. You know, these are not younger guys. I mean, even Finn Balor, as young as he looks, he's 36 years of age. He's older than Zlatan Ibrahimovic, for God's sake. You know, so, you know, they can't really mess about with these guys, because, you know, these are guys that have worked, you know, very, very tough kind of matches in the ring. And they're all, you know, carrying injuries that they've had for a number of years. And, you know, the time will come for a lot of these guys that 3-4 years down the line, they simply won't be able to go in the way that they could go for much of their careers. So now's the time to really capitalize on them. And that's why I hope that it's not long before Cassius Ohno ends up on the main roster, because that's where he belongs. He's as good a talent in the ring as anyone in that company, trust me. And it's just a shame that thus far he's not been able to show it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, don't try and reinvent the wheel. Make the most of what you've got with the time that you've got left. And well, you mentioned the main roster there. You know, some of the guys you've talked about, obviously Shinsuke Nakamura. He's a headliner. He's a guy being really pushed around this Backlash event. You know, they've built the promos around him. So certainly looking forward to it. Kind of mixed views on how that's been built as well. I must admit how they've used Nakamura. I like that we haven't really seen him in a match yet, because it builds that anticipation. But I'm not so sure about some of the promo side of it. Question I've got, though, is just around the Backlash event, with him being kind of the focal point of this event, do you have him go on last, Or do you have AJ Styles or Kevin Owens going last? Or do you have the WWE title match going on last, which is, in all honesty, is likely to be a bit of a stinker and perhaps not the best way to end a show? I mean, if it's up to you more, if you're booking the event, which of the matches goes on last for you?
For me, it has to be the championship match. As uninspiring as it is with Harlan Orton, it's still the WWE Championship. It's the main title that this company's had going back to its formation in 1963. So for them to relegate it to the mid-card on the SmackDown pay-per-view, which, you know, ultimately is still the number two brand in the company, would be a new low for that championship belt. So, you know, they need to have it go on last, but have somebody like the Nakamura-Ziggler match go on perhaps two matches before the main event. And typically WWE does that they'll put on a big match, you know, three matches from the top, then have what they call a downer-type match just to bring the crowd down, and they might just go for the six women tag team match prior to the main event, just like they did, if you remember, at WrestleMania. We had one of the women's matches just before the main event at WrestleMania, and that's a fairly common tactic. And then they can go with Orton and Mahal in the main event. I'd be very surprised if the WWE Championship isn't the main event. Albeit, you're quite right. Nakamura has certainly featured very, very prominently in the build-up towards Backlash.
Yeah, I mean, the old school in me absolutely agrees with you because, yes, it's the main championship. It's really speaking, it is the main title in that company. It's just that it's not been perceived in that way lately because the way it's been booked, the way it's been passed around, and it just doesn't feel as prestigious as it should be. But the other side of it is, I just think about how you play that crowd, you know, where you're getting the crowd up and then they're going to go down, and the, you know, people, you're going to go, that show goes off the air unless they do a big surprise and Jinder Mahal actually wins the title. You know, that show goes off the air in pretty uninspiring fashion, I feel. I mean, could it be that they do it that way though? Do you think Jinder Mahal can win this? You know, are they that serious about hitting the Indian market? And obviously, not only that, but they do like to throw surprises in here and there.
Well, they do. That's right. But I feel that they would feel, even in wanting to create some kind of traction with the Indian audience, which is, by certain metrics, their second biggest market. By other metrics, it's third biggest market. If they want to really get a native character over in Jinder Mahal, you know, they can do that without putting the main belt on him, because, you know, whilst it might get him over slightly bit more than if he doesn't win the title, I think it would be more damaging in its biggest market, namely the United States of America. And that's why I think that they won't go all the way with Jinder Mahal just yet. And I think the booking over the last several weeks on SmackDown has certainly suggested to me that they won't go all the way. Jinder's been put over very strong, and victory after victory, beat AJ Styles this past week. And that for me is a telltale sign that, you know, he'll be losing at Backlash this weekend, and it'll be Orton that will retain the title. But they might then decide, actually, let's go back to Mahal and Styles, and it could be that Styles wins the United States Championship, and they might decide that the next SmackDown pay-per-view, it's Mahal that beats Styles for that belt, and they eventually do put a belt on him, and they can perhaps tour India with Mahal as a champion, albeit not the WWE champion.
Yeah, that again, I mean, that's a possibility, and the only thing from that is, again, you're hot-shotting a belt about, and they seem to have done that so much this year, and I don't like it. I know that occasionally you will move it here and there just to free things up, so it's not quite so predictable, but it feels like there's just way too much hot shot in the belts this year. They've been like hot potatoes.
Well, that's
right. And it just does nothing for the title, though, does it?
No, it doesn't. But in the days when they actually gave a shit about their TV ratings, they really wouldn't hot shot the belts around in the way they have. And obviously they did in the Attitude Era when Vince Russo was around, because he saw no value in the titles. He saw the titles as nothing more than props. And, after he moved on, they went back to a more sensible approach to booking titles, and title changes generally weren't occurring as frequently. And obviously, as we've talked about several times this year, title changes have occurred with alarming frequency. And that, I think the reason for that is that they really are generally no longer concerned about TV ratings. TV ratings at the moment are at record lows for Raw and SmackDown, albeit SmackDown has had some decent weeks of ratings. Those ratings are at 20-year lows, and that is so poor, really, really poor. But they don't care, because they're making more money than ever. The network subscription numbers are doing well. Their TV money is just ramping up because of deals signed several years ago. So there's no real need to worry about TV ratings. So therefore, putting out title match after title match to make title belts mean less than they perhaps did a year or two back, it really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, because the key thing that matters to them is making money, and they're making more money than ever.
Yeah, I suppose, but I always think that, well, you know, if your ratings keep going down and going down, then eventually the money's going to start going down as well, so... But,
well, you would have thought that, yeah. I mean, yeah. Their TV deal, their main one in the United States, I think it's not due for another couple of years. I had actually thought it was due this year, but it isn't. It was a 5-year deal, so they've got another 2 years left on it. And certainly for the next year, well, up until the time they want to start negotiating the deal and putting it out, the feelers out there to other networks to see, okay, what kind of money can we make? I don't think they'll worry too much about ratings and the fact that they have dipped to alarming levels just yet. But that's part of the fact that, you know, we see so many title changes because, they just ultimately don't care about ratings anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, talking title changes there, then do you expect AJ Styles to win the US title from Kevin Owens? Because I've got to be honest, as much as I think AJ Styles is a great title holder for WWE, and I think he did an awful lot for the WWE title, I don't see him winning the US title here. I think if they're sensible, they'll move him back into the main title picture and probably get the belt back on him. Perhaps for a showdown at some point with Shinsuke Nakamura, which would be phenomenal, and I'm sure we're all dreaming of that. But personally, I'd be opening the show with AJ and Owens, and I think it's going to be a fantastic match and just lots of fun, which I think it always is with Kevin Owens, and it's nice to see the nasty side coming back out of him lately.
Well, that's right, yeah. Less of the comedy, obviously, now that he's away from Chris Jericho, he can go to being a little bit more serious. And it will be interesting, I mean, which way they go with this. I think that Kevin Owens, there needs to be a purpose for him to come over to SmackDown and for it to mean something. And for me, the only way that Kevin Owens moving to SmackDown can mean something is for him to be in that WWE title picture. And for that to happen, given the fact that he's a heel, I think that it might just be that he has to drop the title. And obviously Orton is still pushed as a face, even though certainly online he's got a weird way of showing it. Perhaps we'll talk about that later on. But as I speculated, I think Randy Orton will retain the title, And then obviously he needs a heel adversary. And I just don't think that they'll want to make that program title versus title. They can use the United States Championship for something else. And I think now is the time to start building Owens and Orton as a good program to be the feature program on SmackDown. And so for that reason, I think that Owens will drop the belt. But the next night, sorry, two nights later on the live SmackDown, you know, he'll let Randy Orton know that that belt around Orton's waist is the one that he's really after. So that's where I see that one going. I think for that reason, AJ Styles will win.
So just looking elsewhere on the card more, I mean, one, I'm not normally one for the pre-shows. I must admit, I generally don't watch them. I'm not into them. But there was one that caught my eye there, and it's Ty Dillinger fighting on the pre-show up against Aiden English, which, I mean, suggests to me that it's going to be a squash match, which is fine. But kind of curious to me. I mean, Ty Dillinger came in. They made him feel like a bit of a star. They gave him a bit of a push, and he was getting over nicely. Then all of a sudden, he's kind of disappeared off TV for a couple of weeks, and now he's on the pre-show. I'm just quite curious by this, and I don't know. Is that the best thing for him? You know, to wrestle a meaningless match on a pre-show, or you know, if he needed to be off TV for a couple of weeks, maybe you know, a minor knock or something like that. Maybe just bring him back on TV, you know, and continue the push that way. Am I old school?
No, I think the reason why they've decided to put him on the pre-show is obviously the first match on shows generally gets a good reaction. And what better way to get the crowd really hot than to bring in one of their cult favourites to open the show with in Ty Dillinger. And, you know, Ty Dillinger, Chicago crowd, opening match, pay-per-view. It's got all the ingredients for a, you know, really, really great way to kick off the show. Albeit not the main show, obviously. It will be the pre-show, but I think that's the logic behind it. But I mean, again, you make a very valid point. Slightly confusing use of Ty Dillinger, brought in with a fair bit of fanfare a few weeks ago. Made his long-awaited main roster debut after having served fine stint on NXT, where, you know, through his own hard work, got over tremendously well on the back of that 10 chant. And you know, since then, slightly questionable how they used him. But again, it might just be a case of them wanting to push other people ahead of him, and he'll just have to wait his turn. But at the very least, I think that you know, he'll go out there, put in a good performance, be over like Rover, and kick off the pre-show better than pretty much anybody can on that roster at this moment in time.
Well, talking of questionable use of someone, Sami Zayn, you know, it was a long topic overall, you know, it wasn't really the right fit for him, his character, his style. He was more suited to SmackDown. We thought, you know, if they could just move him across, it would make sense. You know, we thought he'd get used better. He's come across to SmackDown, and as yet, it feels like he's just not got going, you know, as though he's still kind of perpetually in the same position he was in on Raw, where he's just kind of floating around, and they don't seem to really have an idea what to do with him at the moment. Do you think this is just kind of a holding period and they'll maybe get behind him sometime in the near future?
I think they will, but I say that with a bit of hesitation because it's been carrying on for quite a while now. I mean, if you remember, in his last several months on the Raw brand, you know, he was the designated jobber or glorified jobber at that for Braun Strowman. And that feud really didn't do any great favours for Sami Zayn. Obviously, prior to that, he'd been working for quite a while, predominantly with Kevin Owens and some of the work that they did was very, very good. Some excellent matches last year between the pair. And, his kind of momentum did certainly take a hit. And what is bizarre to me is the fact that of everyone on either side of the main roster, Raw or SmackDown, that has that kind of plucky, likable, relatable underdog vibe about him, the way that Daniel Bryan had, and what got him so over. Sami Zayn is the one that has got the closest type of personality and vibe and aura about him, in that kind of Daniel Bryan kind of way. And you think that, with Daniel Bryan obviously having to retire last year, they bring Sami Zayn in to effectively replace him in that kind of role. And, it's only so long that you can continue to bury people and treat them as glorified jobbers before people, the fans, give up on them. And I think they're in danger of doing that if they continue with this. And, they were jobbing him out to a Munster in Strowman on Raw, and they brought him over to SmackDown, and they're jobbing him out to another Munster, albeit a little bit less scary, in Baron Corbin, but nonetheless, jobbing him out all the same. Obviously, he's even lost to Jinder Mahal clean in recent weeks as well. So, it's not been a great move for him thus far. But I can't imagine that this would continue much longer. He's just far too talented, exceptional in the ring, very good promo, good personality, gets over with the crowd most weeks when he performs. I think it's only a matter of time before he gets a stronger push. And I'd certainly hope and expect that towards the end of the year, we start seeing him moving into the title picture, and that is the WWE Championship, not the United States Championship.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of match he gets out of Baron Corbin, and who knows? Perhaps a well-booked victory over Corbin can be the springboard for him to move on. Maybe the US title would be a good place for him to start then, sometime in the near future. So here's hoping that they do make the most, and Sami Zayn has more of the Daniel Bryan than the Dolph Ziggler about him. let's hope it's more in that direction. There's another match on there, Luke Harper, Eric Rowan. I'll be honest, I don't have any great appetite in really saying much about this, because it's been sprung up. I can't say I'll be looking forward to that one. Perhaps that would even be the match that is the downer, as you mentioned earlier, before the main event, because as good as Luke Harper is, and he is a really, really good worker, and he's underutilized, I don't think even he can get anything meaningful out of Eric Rowan.
Well, that's right. As you say, Harper's a very talented worker, but Rowan is certainly at the other end of that scale. I still think they can potentially have a half-decent match, but one that 5 minutes after it's finished, nobody will really remember or care much about. It's purely a filler match. There is a buffer between a couple of the more meaningful matches, as you kind of suggested. If it was a loser loses his beard match, maybe that would make people a bit more interested in it. But no, it's just a straight-up singles match. And, Harper almost certainly will go over, and, he will then move on. But other than that, nothing more to really say about it.
No, certainly not. The tag team titles now, American Alpha, it's concerning the way that they've not really got over at all, or not being utilised too well. We know that somewhere in the near future, New Day are going to be coming across the SmackDown. We're going to be seeing them. So the Usos coming up against Breezango, the Fashion Police, they've been getting quite a push lately. Can you see anything other than the Usos getting a good victory here?
No, I can't, no. It's nice that they're doing a little bit with Breeze and Fandango. because Brees in particular is actually another very talented, underutilized talent on that brand. But they're purely a comedy act, and it's rare for a pure comedy act to get a title. So especially the WWE Tag Team Championships. So I just don't see it happening. I think the Usos will retain, and a couple of nights later on SmackDown, they'll then have more meaningful opponents unveiled. And if not, then we'll probably have, I don't know, a three-way number one contenders match or something like that to identify the next opponents. But I'd be absolutely shocked if the Fashion Police become the tag team champions, even though, beneath, those lousy gimmicks and comedy characters, there are actually a couple of pretty decent workers there. But the Usos should retain all day long.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is just, again, a placeholder until the New Day come in. And that really is the feud that we're going to see. The more meaningful program is the Usos. I like the Usos as heels. I think it seems to suit them quite well, and the way they've developed. The Usos versus New Day in this format, I think it is going to be good, and I'm quite looking forward to that. And like yourself, you can't see any way that these titles change hands. But, the WWE being the WWE, who knows? But so the last match to finish off the card, and we have alluded to it, is of course Nakamura up against Dolph Ziggler. Now, you're talking about Dolph Ziggler and that, how booking someone into oblivion, eventually, they go from being the underdog to people just don't care anymore. And I think Dolph Ziggler is probably the best example of just how people have gone from really caring and wanting him to succeed. You think back to him cashing the briefcase in and the huge pop he got the night after WrestleMania, to how he is now when fans really don't care, and even switching over and becoming a heel hasn't done an awful lot for his character. But I've got to say, I am really looking forward to this match, just in that I haven't seen a Nakamura match for a little while, and I think these two could really, really tear things up.
Oh, they certainly could. They're going to be, as you talked about earlier on, in front of Chicago, which is perhaps, arguably WWE's most vociferous live crowd in the United States. And especially in front of that audience, they'll be very, very firmly rooting for Nakamura. And so he'll get a really, really superstar reaction out of that crowd. So it'll be an amazing atmosphere without question. And the match itself should be really good as well. I think Ziggler's, somebody who's, despite having obviously lost a huge amount of momentum, and somebody who's really not seen as a big star anymore, still a very good worker. And, on top of that, Nakamura, when he's motivated, can be absolutely exceptional. Now, and I say that because there are a lot of reports that on various house shows on NXT and even on SmackDown live shows, really has phoned it in for the last year. What, for people who don't understand what that means, it means that he doesn't really work as hard in the matches as we perhaps have seen in some of the bigger takeover matches that we've seen him work in, and certainly compared to what he used to do in New Japan. But he'll be in front of a big sellout crowd. They'll all be lapping up everything that he's got to give, and he'll get a superstar reaction, and I think he'll respond accordingly. I think they'll have a really good match, and it will be a perfect way to really make him seem like a big, big star. And they need that, because this is a brand that is certainly lacking in stars, especially given that John Cena has pretty much become a part-time worker now. And he's the guy that I think we'll have to get used to seeing turn up for 3-4 months, then disappear for 4 or 5, return again, and that will be John Cena from here on in. So given that he's no longer a full-timer, They need people like Nakamura to help carry the brand. And I hope that the match against Dolph Ziggler can certainly help him become that valuable asset that SmackDown needs.
Yeah, I think there's similarities here in the way that he was built at NXT as well. You know, he came in, obviously had the feel of a big star, was put over as a big star, and they didn't throw him straight into the title picture. You know, they held off a little bit before they went for that. So it could be a similar kind of vein here. You know, they've seen the formula that works. So, hey, why not recreate it? Why, as we mentioned earlier with, you know, people from NXT, you know, who were indie stars, why try and reinvent the wheel? So if it works, use it. So, I mean, that's the NXT Chicago and the Backlash pay-per-view. On the whole, Mo, got to say, I'm looking forward to watching both events. What about yourself? Are you feeling quite positive ahead of the weekend?
Tremendously, yeah. I'm really looking forward to all three nights. As I said earlier at the start of the pod, as we tape this, we've got the WWE UK Network special tomorrow night, Friday night, and two excellent matches to feature on there. Then we go into the Takeover show on the Saturday night. Which should feature at least three excellent matches with the potential for all five matches to be really, really good. And then we go into the main event with Backlash on the Sunday night, which should feature at least two or three really good matches too. So three great nights of shows to look forward to on the WWE Network. So very, very excited about that.
Yeah, lots of positivity. Before we go, though, one person who perhaps, despite being the WWE champion, perhaps not quite feeling quite so positive about everything. I know you alluded to it slightly earlier. Randy Orton, he's been sending some tweets out, hasn't he not? Having a bit of a dig at a few people.
Yes, quite the talk of the wrestling social media's universe, if you want to call it that. And he's been playing the blinder here. He's obviously a guy that has spent pretty much his entire career in the WWE, spent a bit of time in the WWE's old developmental territory, Ohio Valley Wrestling, which used to be run by Jim Cornette. Was there for only about, I don't know, 6-9 months, maybe a year, before he was called up to the main roster around 2001, two time. But for all intents and purposes, hadn't really spent any kind of a career in the independent scene. And it was making several disparaging tweets earlier in the week about indie wrestlers, and especially their fondness for dives, flips, and work in a very high spot intensive style. And that seemed to upset quite a lot of independent wrestlers, and they reacted as you'd expect them to. And Will Ospreay, who I rated as the best in-ring worker in all of pro wrestling in 2016, and somebody who's got an amazing career ahead of him, almost certainly will see the inside of a WWE ring in his future, was responding to some of it as well, albeit in a diplomatic way. But there were others like Bully Ray, who Bubba Ray. There we go. He used to be known as Bully Ray in TNA, of course. But Bubba Ray Dudley was also having a bit of a Twitter spat with Randy Orton as well. It was Randy just having a bit of fun because he knows that obviously there's a lot of guys on the independent scene that work a very, very physical style, flips and flops everywhere. And, I mean, he does make a good point. I mean, he's saying, look, you guys are breaking your bodies and injuring yourselves, you know, diving and doing all kinds of crazy moves for low payoffs, and I'm there working a far more safer style, making far more money. And now obviously that'll be perceived as arrogant, but the point he's making is, look, you don't have to break your necks, break your backs, leave yourselves with permanent damage that you'll really regret in later life. By doing all this crazy stuff, you can still become a star without it. But he's doing it in a bit of a,
I've got another way to that for me as well. Probably the old school in me is I see it, the psychology of it as well. If you're doing, 10 dives, if every single match has, 2-3 suicide dives and flips over the top and all the rest of it, it doesn't feel special. It's just another move. And I just think in the psychology of things is, use these moves sparingly here and there, and they're more special. Not only is it, taking less toll on your body, but they just feel a bit more special. It gets a bigger pop. It means more. And I think there's that element to it as well.
That's another point that he's making. And certainly a lot of the old school workers, used to work in the 70s, 80s, etc., would certainly agree with Randy Orton, his kind of sentiments that, limit, these high spots, the bigger spots, as you say, that they mean more. But the way that wrestling, certainly outside of the WWE, has moved is that it's become more high spot orientated, and you certainly get more big spots in matches than you used to, 10, 20 years ago. I mean, there were the odd promotions that obviously, even back in the 90s, would have a very high spot intensive style. Promotions like All Japan Women, Michinoku Pro Wrestling, ECW, CMLL, AAA, promotions like that, were pioneering that kind of stuff. And that's where the likes of Rey Mysterio Jr., and his like, Psicosis, etc., made their start and, made their names in promotions like that. I think that all of these different types of styles have got their place. For me, there's no right or wrong way of wrestling. You can have a classic match with very few high spots. You can also have a classic match with tons of high spots. If you think back to earlier this year, there was a huge amount of buzz about Kenny Omega against Kazuchi Okada, which was the match that famously, the first match ever in 30-plus years that Dave Meltzer was rated at 6 stars from the New Japan Tokyo Dome show on January 4th. And that had so many spots. It was incredible, 40 minutes plus match. But it was just an incredible match, even with tons of high spots. Whereas I've seen other matches this year with, much fewer high spots that were very, very different, but still equally as absorbing. I was at one point in time of that kind of mindset that lots of high spots is a bad thing, but it very much depends on the context. And if you work it smartly, it means that, for example, a pile driver, in one type of match means more than in a match where you see it delivered 5 times. The way that some of these workers can, assemble matches is just quite incredible. And, the other point to make about these more high spot intensive matches is that obviously those matches are a bit more unrealistic, a bit more far-fetched in terms of the logic, in terms of what you're seeing. But, fans increasingly now don't really look for matches to be something that resembles a fight or athletic competition like a UWFI type of wrestling match. They increasingly just see it as entertainment now, and therefore it's a bit more easier for guys to have 500 high spots in a match and for it to still get over than perhaps they could in front of Western audiences maybe 20, 25, 30 years ago.
There's a diverse audience out there, and there's diverse styles, so variety is the spice of life. So Randy Orton might have had a point, but sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So there you go, a nice way for us to sign off. One final thing before we do go, Mo, do you have anything out at the moment, any latest articles that you'd like to plug?
None as yet, no, not at the moment. As I mentioned last week, actually be having a TNA feature in the June issue of the Total Wrestling magazine. And so close at the time, I'll give details on how you can access that article. That's something I'm looking forward to writing. And that's pretty much it from myself. How about yourself, Andy? Anything to plug?
Nothing for me at the moment. No, I'm pretty quiet. So I'm going away on holiday next week. So all my my efforts are going towards making sure I've got everything ready for holiday. So there you go. Which means I will not be around on the podcast the next couple of weeks on this podcast. So I trust it will be in safe hands while I'm away, though.
I'm sure it will be. I'll be joined next week by a special guest, the podcast whore himself, Guy Drinkle. So looking forward to joining Guy on next week's pod to review NXT TakeOver, the WWE UK show, as well as Backlash. And after that, I'll be disappearing as well for slightly longer, taking in an in-depth voyage of Parts Unknown for the best part of June. So I won't be returning till July. So I think that means, Andy, that you and I won't be speaking on this pod for a good 6 weeks or so. But I'm sure that likewise, when I'm not around, it'll be in safe hands too.
And, yes. It'll be in safe hands. Whoever's at the wheel, this truck will keep on rolling. Don't you worry about that, folks. Don't you worry about the thing. I'll give us all the more to look forward to the next time we speak, Mo. Obviously, anything from Mo, from myself, anything you need to know will be tweeted out from the account at PW_index, if I can say that. And that's it. That wraps up this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. So as always, I want to thank Mo Chatra for joining me. And we want to thank all of you, the listeners, for hitting that download button and taking the time to listen to the show. We really do appreciate it. Like we say many, many times, don't be afraid. Do get involved with us here. Use the Twitter handle at PW_index if you want to get in touch with us. Anything that you want to send our way, thoughts, feedback, suggestions, questions, anything at all, that's a place to do it. But until next week, when it'll be Mo and Guy taking the reins over from me for a couple of weeks, it's bye-bye from me.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.